Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Thoughts for a More Sustainable World, a podcast series by master students in sustainable development at KU Leuven. I am Sophie, your host for today, and I'll be joined by my colleagues Vera.
Hi.
And Lucas.
Hello.
Our group has been exploring gender, development, and environmental action for the last couple of months, and today we'll present some insights. This episode is centered on Sustainable Development Goal number 5, gender equality, which is one of the 17 goals established by the United Nations in 2015. These goals aim to achieve a better and more sustainable future for all by 2030. Gender equality is fundamental as it affects progress across all other SDGs. Throughout this episode, we will analyze SDG 5 through real-world case studies and dive into challenges in implementation. From the Solar Sisters project in Tanzania, Kenya, and Nigeria, to the Barefoot College in India, and to the Raise Her Business Plan in China. These examples demonstrate complexities of combining gender equality and sustainable development. We will also critically examine top-down and bottom-up approaches and discuss the implications for long-term improvement. By the end of this episode, we hope to provide tools for critically assessing gender-focused development initiatives. Let's begin by setting the scene. Today, we're diving into the dynamics of top-down approaches in projects that promote gender equality and environmental sustainability. Are these approaches effective, or do they come with hidden flaws? Let's explore this by looking at real case studies. Then, we will consider academic theories related to these initiatives. Vera, could you start by telling us something about the Solar Sister project?
Well, of course, Sophie. Solar Sisters is a non-profit working in Nigeria, Tanzania, and Kenya. It provides women with training and resources to sell solar-powered cooking equipment, offering an alternative to open-fire cooking. This initiative not only generates income, but also enhances women's leadership and business skills. It's a powerful example of linking gender equality with environmental sustainability.
Yeah, that's right. However, it is important to keep in mind that these projects use a top-down approach. They're initiated by external actors like international organizations or NGOs who decide the focus, such as training women in solar energy or cooking technologies. Women might actively join these projects, but their participation is often limited to implementing predetermined solutions.
So, Solar Sisters is not a bottom-up grassroots project, is it?
Yeah, exactly. There's limited grassroots involvement in deciding what's needed. Women are recruited through local partnership, but the structure remains largely top-down, and this raises important questions. Are these initiatives empowering women, or are they simply imposing external solutions similar to technical fixes?
Let's unpack that further. You mentioned the historical context earlier. How did this approach develop?
Well, top-down approaches have roots in the 1980s Women in Development framework. This approach explored how women could contribute to developmental projects. Contemporary criticisms to this framework have pointed out that it treated women as a homogenous group with static roles, for example, and that women's labor was uncritically used in development projects to benefit households. This often reinforced gender divisions instead of challenging them.
Yeah, that's right. And this is where material feminist theory becomes really useful. This theory explores how gender roles are shaped not just by ideas or stereotypes, but also by material conditions like access to resources, labor opportunities, and power structures, and how these factors interact. This theory looks beyond simple assumptions about gender.
Can you give us an example of this?
Of course. So, for example, women in the Barefoot Project in India are trained as solar engineers, which challenges traditional gender roles that often exclude women from technical work. Material feminist theory helps us to see that it's just not about empowering women in a general sense. It's about examining how access to training, education, and resources can shift power dynamics. By unpacking these gender assumptions, we can better understand the hierarchies and power relations within women's group.
That's a good point. So would you say projects like Solar Sisters are entirely top-down?
I would not say entirely. They can also be seen as hybrid projects that combine top-down elements, like external funding and training, with efforts to address local needs. What makes these projects hybrid is that while they originate from outside, they depend on local participation and adaption. Communities are not just passive recipients. They actively engage with and reshape these initiatives to better suit their own realities.
True, but still many projects, also the Solar Sisters, are led by external actors and therefore maintain a top-down approach. We still need to question the dominance of the top-down approaches. Why? Because it can easily slip into being paternalistic.
Paternalistic? Can you explain more to us?
Well, what I meant is that a top-down approach can create a sort of male savior complex. It can result in external actors coming in assuming women need to be saved.
Has this been criticized at all?
Yeah, definitely. Such a paternalist attitude is openly criticized by feminist political ecology. This framework highlights how environmental policies must consider the different roles men and women play in society, especially during crises like climate disasters. It points out that women are often disproportionately affected by such a disaster. Teaching women to cook more sustainably with solar-powered stoves might seem helpful to external organizations, but it can miss the point entirely. While the project addresses environmental goals, it can reinforce traditional gender roles like tying women to household chores such as cooking without tackling deeper structural issues or local needs.
Yeah, that's so important. Feminist political ecology shows that systemic gender issues aren't solvable with quick technical fixes. These projects might meet short-term environmental goals, but overlook structural gender inequalities like land ownership, decision-making, or access to resources.
So what's an example of structural inequality being ignored?
Well, one major issue is that women own less than 20% of the world's land. This inequality is often rooted in inheritance structures that reproduce gender hierarchies over generations. If a top-down project doesn't address this reality, it might give women short-term tools, but might fail to challenge the deeper systems that keep women marginalized. That's why these projects can sometimes feel like a band-aid. They offer technical fixes to more complex problems.
So what happens if women aren't involved in decision-making and projects are purely top-down?
Well, without women's active involvement in the design, it's really difficult to ensure long-term success. When external actors exclude women from this, they risk that projects won't align with women's actual needs or priorities. If women don't feel ownership over a project, it can be hard to ensure commitment in the long run.
That makes a lot of sense. To sum up, it seems like top-down approaches can risk making women dependent on external help instead of empowering them to design their own solutions.
Yeah, and they can frame women as passive victims of environmental issues rather than key actors in driving change. This critique has led to a shift from women in development to women and development frameworks, which focus more on the structural causes of inequality like capitalism and the patriarchy, instead of treating women's issues as isolated and localized problems.
But are top-down approaches all bad? Is there anything positive about them?
Not necessarily all bad. Top-down projects can play a role in breaking barriers for women in rural areas, when many women face enormous challenges like limited education, restricted access to resources, and cultural norms reinforced by patriarchal systems. Bottom-up initiatives, while ideal, can be really hard to start in these contexts.
That's where programs like Solar Sisters make a difference. By providing external support, they offer women training, knowledge, and opportunities that wouldn't be available otherwise. In this way, top-down approaches can open doors and challenge existing barriers.
So it's a balancing act. Top-down approaches have their limitations, but they can also bring much-needed resources and opportunities. The key is to ensure, it seems, that women are actively involved, not just as recipients, but as leaders and decision makers.
Yeah, exactly, Sophie. It's about combining external support with local participation to create solutions that are both sustainable and empowering.
Well, that's a lot to think about. Thank you both for breaking this down so clearly. now that we have explored the top-down approach, are there any other aspects that we should consider?
Well, as far as I know, in some areas, programs focused on women's empowerment have met opposition from men. The male backlash in face of female empowerment is an important but often omitted point.
That seems an interesting aspect. Would you like to share more with us?
Of course. Well, according to feminist political ecology, environmental interventions and resource redistribution processes have not only changed the traditional gender division of labor, but have also profoundly affected gender power structures within families and communities. These shifts in gender power dynamics are often met with resistance, particularly from men who perceive these changes as threats. In many traditional societies, development projects focusing on gender equality face significant opposition, especially in areas with strong social norms.
This sounds a bit abstract. Could you perhaps clarify with an example?
I have an example where this kind of resistance is evident, in the case of the Barefoot College in India, where women face potential risks as they challenge local social norms, thereby reflecting the worrying social status of women in this area. In certain regions, local traditions dictate that women perform tasks typically assigned to lower castes in India, and they are not even permitted to approach traders independently without the presence of a man. Additionally, some women encountered resistance from their husbands or in-laws when they expressed interest in joining the Solar Engineers program. For example, one participant shared that her in-laws objected to her involvement in the project, forcing her to leave her children with her mother in order to attend the training.
Well, I would also like to add that, according to studies conducted in India and Cameroon, conservative attitudes among young men who believe that promoting women's rights diminishes their opportunities can even lead to more severe unintended consequences, such as domestic violence from male partners. In general, the problem is that many women empowering initiatives don't take into account these kind of reactions. Moreover, Leach argues that considering women's labor as central to environmental sustenance often increases their workload with environmental chores, thereby reinforcing regressive gender roles.
So, what should be done instead?
Interventions which enable women to generate income are a good option, as exemplified by Raise Her Business Plan, which provides microcredit and training to empower women in underdeveloped areas in China. This project empowers women to monetize their work rather than taking on additional unpaid responsibilities.
From this, I guess that a possible way to address challenges is to engage with men in gender equality initiatives. Strategies that aim at generating income for women and avoid reinforcing traditional rules are essential for promoting sustainable and equitable progress, but do need to consider the male backlash.
Yeah, exactly.
To wrap things up, today we have explored SDG 5 through the lens of gender and environmental sustainability. We analysed top-down approaches, their limitations, and the importance of integrating bottom-up solutions. From Solar Sisters to Barefoot College to Raise Her Business Plan, these initiatives show both progress and challenges in achieving gender equality. The women who participated in these projects acquired technical and soft skills, generated income, and thereby improved their social status to some extent. However, our analysis shows that the often implemented technical fixes trying to empower women do not address structural inequality, therefore not fully accomplishing the essence of the Sustainable Development Goal number 5, gender equality. We hope to have left you with a few more tools to critically consider projects linking gender equality and sustainable development. Our key takeaway? True empowerment requires addressing structural inequalities while involving communities in meaningful ways. Thank you very much, Vera and Lucas, for joining me today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, Nienka and Boxiang, for working behind the scenes. And thank you all for listening to Thoughts for a More Sustainable World.